Hari Om Sahana Vavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastamavidavishavahai Om Shanti 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 Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
This is a little fast. Okay, page 134. Thus, although someone may say that the Supreme Person is different from the cosmic manifestation, actually he is not. The Lord says, Maya tatam idam sarvam. In my impersonal feature, I am spread throughout the world. Right, so he is non-different by his impersonal feature. He's different by his personal features. Right, and then his localized, that's in between.
Yes.
Yes. Therefore, this world is not different from him. The difference is a difference in names. For example, whether we speak of gold earrings, gold bangles, or gold necklaces, ultimately they are all gold. In a similar way, all the different manifestations of matter and spirit are ultimately one in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Ekam eva dvitiyam brahma. This is the Vedic version, Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.1. There is oneness because everything emanates from the Supreme Brahman. The example already given is that there is no difference between a golden earring and the gold mind as it is. The Vaisheshika philosophers, however, because of their Mayavad conception, create differences. They say, Brahma Satyam Jagat Mitya. The absolute truth is real and the cosmic manifestation is false. Right? So this is where they're going to have problems. Is that even though they may accept a principle of the Supreme and all that, but they don't connect it with the Supreme, so therefore the material world is false, because that's why the atomic theory, they're trying to break it down into atoms, so therefore that's what's not real. It goes back into Brahman, that's where it becomes real. So. The absolute truth is real and the cosmic manifestation is false, but why should the Jagat be considered a mitya? The Jagat is an emanation from Brahman, therefore the Jagat is also truth. Vaishnavas therefore do not consider the Jagat to be mitya, rather they regard everything as reality in connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Right? What's not seeing without connection to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's what's false. So when we say people want to know the truth, truth means how it connects to Krishna. And if they're saying truth is, it means in a consideration not connected to Krishna, that's false. Right? Like that. So it's just a matter, do you want to know true facts or false facts? The Jagat should not be rejected as mitya. It is truth, and the truth is realized when everything is engaged in the service of the Lord. A flower accepted for one's sense gratification is material, but when the same flower is offered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead by a devotee, it is spiritual. Food taken and cooked for oneself is material, but food cooked for the Supreme Lord is spiritual prasad. This is a question of realization. Actually, everything is given by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and therefore everything is spiritual. But those who are not advanced in proper knowledge make distinctions because of the interaction of the three modes of material nature. In this regard, Srila Jiva Goswami says that although the sun is the only light, the sunshine, which is exhibited in seven colors, and darkness, which is the absence of sunshine, is not different from the sun. For without the existence of the sun, such differentiations cannot exist. There may be very varied nomenclature because of different conditions, but they are all the sun. Right? So that's the 14 books of Vedic knowledge. It looks like there's difference, but actually it's just all topics about Krishna. Right? So therefore it has different languages, different names, different things that are used. But the point is, it's still all about Krishna. Just people don't see that. They don't understand how Brahman is pervading, how Brahman is everything, so how the topic is actually about Krishna. Right? So Ayurveda is about Krishna. But if we just say, oh, it's about Krishna, so now I can just, you know, poke my nose in there and not worry about Krishna, then we've missed the whole point. You know, because you can say, no, but we only have to do that. No, you have to focus on Krishna. Just like, let's say, Bhagavad Gita. We would say it's quite obvious that Krishna's involved there. But there are Mayavadis who say he's not. Right? Because that's just, you know, that's just the mode of goodness speaking. It's not actually transcendence. So the point is without studying it with the proper appreciation in line with what the parampara gives, then it will just be avidya.
This is where we say that a little bit of knowledge is dangerous.
Yes, a little bit of knowledge is dangerous. The Puranas therefore say, just as the illumination of a fire, which is situated in one place, is spread all over, the energies of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Parabrahman, are spread all over this universe. Vishnu Purana 1:22.53. Right, so whatever energies are there, that's what the Shastras are talking about. That's coming from the same one Supreme Lord. Right? So you can say Paravidya is the topic. And then as it spreads out, because it has different colors, there's darkness, there's light, all these things, different, the way it's presented, therefore it appears that there's 14 topics. Does that make sense? But technically there's one. Materially, we can directly perceive the sunshine spreading itself according to different names and activities. But ultimately, the sun is one. Similarly, sarvam kalvidam brahma, everything is an expansion of the Supreme Brahman. Therefore, the Supreme Lord is everything, and he is one without differentiation. There is no existence separate from the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So we see is, any time we get seriously into this kind of topic, Prabhupada will always conclude with this point. He'll make the point, he'll conclude with this point. He already mentioned it before, but now he's concluding with that. Because one way to say is, okay, well, that is good for the Mayavadis, not that, but actually, we'll see as we go on in the studies, when we get next year, we'll see this is the point that Krishna makes to the gopis. So naturally, it's in our line, they're going to take this very seriously. Not because of the Mayavadis. We're not saying this because Mayavadis saying it, we're just turning it around on them. You know? We're doing it because we actually understand what it means, everything is Krishna. And if you can see everything as Krishna, then it can be Udipan for seeing everything as in connection with Bhagavan. That's the whole point. We're not just leaving it at means one, it'll defeat on the platform of the Sat, you know, Sat and Chit, it'll defeat all the other philosophies and establish what's the correct understanding. But when you take it through into Bhagavan, then it simply becomes part of Vibhava. Yes. It becomes Udipan for remembering the Lord. While here, you know, it becomes a bit more dry. But actually, it's all Krishna. That's why it's so nice. Does that make sense? Yeah. Lord Mahadev continued, those who are known as the impersonalist Vedantists regard you as the impersonal Brahman. Others, known as the Mimamsakas philosophers, regard you as religion. Right? They just see is that everything has its dharma, and therefore everything works. So you have to address the Dharma. And to not address the Dharma, as Shastra gives, as the laws are, that's adharmic. You know, which on that level is there, but that's all the farther they see him as Dharma. So they only see him as the Manomaya Purush. Right? They're not actually worried beyond that. Yeah. Does that make sense? Yeah. The Shankya philosophers regard you as a transcendental person who is beyond Prakriti and Purusha, and who is the controller of even the demigods. Right, so that means real Shankya. We're not talking about the bogus Shankya here. The philosophers of the codes of devotional service known as the Pancharatras regard you as being endowed with 9 different potencies. Footnote 43. Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakura writes to verse 9, the 9 Shaktis are Vimala, Utkarshini, Jnana, Kriya, Yoga, Pravi, Satya, Ishana, and Anugraha. And the Patanjali philosophers, the followers of Patanjali Muni, regard you as the supreme independent personality of Godhead, who has no equal or superior. O my Lord, I, who am considered to be the best of the demigods and Lord Brahma and the other rishis, headed by Marichi, are born of the mode of goodness. Nonetheless...
Sorry. Can we say that these ones, they would be profession in those Manamoya Purush, Vijnanamoya Purush?
You might find that it's there, but it's also interesting how he's going up from the bottom,
yes.
Right? But notice who's on the bottom.
Impersonal.
Yeah, the impersonal Vedantas. They're on the bottom, so they're lower, technically lower than the Karmis. By respect due to them, by etiquette and all that, you will give them more respect because the field they deal with is actually a higher field. But because of the impersonal nature of their interpretation of that, that actually puts them as lower. Because the difficulty will come is, okay, the Mimamsaka, he is interested in karma and all that for himself. If you can switch that to about Krishna, then he's interested to do nice works based on Shastra under the order of Guru for Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So it'll be easy for him to come across and engage the senses, while for the Mayavadi, very difficult because his idea of transcendence is no engagement of the senses. So that's why in this kind of lineup, they're on the lowest. As far as etiquette and goes, they're interested in liberation, then they're considered higher than the Karmis. Right? Just like in the devotional process, you have karma yoga, then above that will be jnana yoga. Right? Because it'll be a natural development. Right? So, yes.
So can we say that according to the etiquette, they are on the higher level, but according to the philosophy, they're on the bottom?
Yes. Means, in other words, if you have a karmi and you have a jnani, right, you're going to respect the karmi for his religiousness, his religious behavior. But the jnani has to be respected for his transcendental understanding. So, generally, the karmi will always be a grihastha. And the jnani, if he's properly situated, will always be a sannyasi or a renunciate of some. So therefore, in that way, you would respect. Sometimes you'll have someone who was, karmi is when younger, and when they get older, then they take up jnana because it's just the nature of, because that's what Dharma says. So then he would be more respectable than the grihastha karmi, even though technically he's still kind of in that line. But, to some extent, he's moving towards jnana. So it's just, so etiquette-wise, we would deal properly here. We wouldn't call them Mayavadi and like that kind of things. Okay. Oh, my Lord, I am aside from us, what is to be said of others, right? It means, consider the best of the demigods and Lord Brahma and the other rishis headed by Marichi are born of the mode of goodness. Nonetheless, we are bewildered by your illusory energy and cannot understand what this creation is. Aside from us, what is to be said of others, right? They're born in goodness, they get bewildered, so what's going to be of everybody else who's born in passion and ignorance? Aside from us, what is to be said of others, like the demons and human beings, who are in the base modes of material nature, Rajagun and Tamagun? How will they know you? My Lord, you are the supreme knowledge personified. You know everything about this creation and its beginning, maintenance, and annihilation. And you know all the endeavors made by all the living entities, by which they are either implicated in this material world or liberated from it. As the air enters the vast sky and also enters the bodies of all moving and non-moving entities, you are present everywhere and therefore you are the knower of all. My Lord, I have seen all kinds of incarnations you have exhibited by your transcendental qualities. And now that you have appeared as a beautiful young woman, I wish to see that form of your lordship. My Lord, we have come here desiring to see that form of your lordship, which you showed to the demons to captivate them completely, and in this way enable the demigods to drink nectar. I am very eager to see that form, Sukadeva Goswami said. When Lord Vishnu was thus requested by Lord Shiva, who carries a trident in his hand, he smiled with gravity and replied to Lord Shiva as follows. 9:14. Srila Prabhupada comments, The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, is known as Yogeshwara. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Bhagavad Gita 18:78. Mystic yogis want to acquire some power by practicing the yoga system. But Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is known as the Supreme Lord of all mystic power. Lord Shiva. Lord Shiva wanted to see the Mohini Murti, which was captivating the entire world. And Lord Vishnu was gravely thinking of how to captivate Lord Shiva also. Therefore, the word Bhava Gambhiram is used here. The illusory material energy is represented by Durga Devi, who is the wife of Girisha, or Lord Shiva. Durga Devi could not captivate Lord Shiva's mind. But now that Lord Shiva wanted to see Lord Vishnu's feminine form, Lord Vishnu, by his mystic power, would assume a form that would captivate even Lord Shiva. Therefore, Lord Vishnu was grave and at the same time was smiling. So he's grave thinking about, okay, he's going to do, because he doesn't want to let on too much. Otherwise, lose the moment, right? You know, the fun that's going to ensue. Right, so the point is Maya can't attract him, so it has to be beyond that. Verses 15 to 47, Lord Shiva captivated by Mohini Murti. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, when the demons took away the jug of nectar, I assumed the form of a beautiful woman to bewilder them by directly cheating them and thus to act in the interest of the demigods. Right, because we notice that the demigods didn't become bewildered. That means he only showed a portion of his potency. Right? Because the demigods being in goodness and having the proper attitudes and all that and knowing the Supreme Lord's doing, then they didn't get bewildered. The demons did. But now he has to put on a greater show to catch Lord Shiva.
Is this an example of the Lord being impartial but still favoring the devotees?
Yes, yes.
Because he could have bewildered all of them.
No, but what's the point? The point was just to get the nectar. See, they formed a truce. They were working together that they would be fighting. That would be improper. So how to take the nectar back from them when they've taken it unlawfully? At the same time as by doing that, he could understand they're not qualified. You know, if after getting the nectar, they all sat there and were all properly behaved, then maybe there's a consideration. But no, they behave badly, so therefore they shouldn't get. So how to take the nectar from them, distribute it so they don't get any, and at the same time as they're not disturbed, at least until it's distributed. So therefore then the form of the woman, that will do it. Right? So very captivating and enchanting, so they're just absorbed in that, they forget everything else. You know, like that. Okay, Srila Prabhupada comments. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead assumed the form of the beautiful woman Mohini Murti, the demons were certainly captivated, but the demigods present were not. In other words, those who maintain a demoniac mentality are bewildered by the beauty of a woman. But those who are advanced in Krishna consciousness, or even those on the platform of goodness, are not bewildered. The Supreme Personality of Godhead knew that because Lord Shiva is not an ordinary person, he cannot be bewildered even by the most beautiful woman. Cupid himself tried to invoke Lord Shiva's lusty desires in the presence of Parvati, but Lord Shiva was never agitated. Rather, the blazing fire from Lord Shiva's eyes turned Cupid to ashes. Therefore, that doesn't work. It's been proven. Therefore, Lord Vishnu had to think twice about what kind of beautiful form would bewilder even Lord Shiva. Consequently, he was smiling gravely, as stated in the previous verse. Prahasya bhava gambhiram. A beautiful woman generally cannot induce Lord Shiva to be lusty. But Lord Vishnu was considering whether there was any form of woman who could enchant him. Yes.
Why would he do that?
Because he wants to see, it means he just heard about, and so it's another incarnation of the Lord and all that. So then,
why Lord Vishnu does it to Shiva?
No, but the point is Lord, he's dealing with Lord Shiva. He's thinking, oh wow, this is, what is that for? You know, so There's an interest, so then Vishnu is going to have some fun. We'll see later on, it also establishes his position and everything like that. So it works out. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, "O best of the demigods, I shall now show you my form that is very much appreciated by those who are lusty." Right? Because that's the point, is you heard it was very... Because the demigod just said, you know, this happened, but he was saying, oh, but the demons were very, you know, enchanted. So what is that enchanting form? So since it was taking on that aspect, therefore, okay, then they'll make it enchanted. Yeah. "Since you want to see that form, I shall reveal it to you in your presence." Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, "Lord Vishnu thought, whatever may be, your purpose in coming so far should not be wasted. Since you wanted to see it, I will show it. If I do not, your curiosity will not go away. This form gives rise to lust. Therefore, this form is respected by lusty people. However, it cannot be produce lust in you, who are the enemy of lust. But if you are curious, then please see it." That is the external meaning. There is, however, an inner meaning. "This desire of you, who are the conqueror of lust and a great yogi, will cause you to fall into the whirlpool of lust. It will not be my fault." You know, so he's saying, you know, you're the yogi, and he's, yes, yes. That's, but, you know, hey.
No, he didn't say that.
Who?
Shiva. He said that he is touched by the modes and before.
That's there. But he, you know, but the point is, his position is that he's not disturbed by Maya Devi. Yes, so that means this can't be something within there. But since it's the Lord, it's by his internal potency, they don't have that quality. But it's the internal potency, not Lakshmi, so it's manifest from him directly, right? Through the Surup Shakti, but you know, from him directly. So it doesn't have any connection to any of his internal potencies form. Does that make sense? So it has to be connected to him only, not connected to any of his concepts.
You say the point is that Maya doesn't get us in trouble, our desires gets us in trouble?
Basically, yeah. Because Maya is only presenting what you're interested in. You know, in other words, what Google is just now figuring out, Maya's been using since eternity. Yeah, I mean, it's just whatever samskara you try, then that's the next thing she'll present. Anything within that line, and as you adjust it, then she'll present there. So they're thinking it's an advancement, right? Technological advancement. Yeah. All it is introducing more and more Maya. That's all. Right? Yeah. And then, because you'll be so much in Maya, you won't even be able to drive, so that the car will drive for you. So then you can just be watching YouTube the whole time. Right? You know, so. Right?
Yeah,
it's a plan, right?
That's what's going to happen.
Yeah. Srila Prabhupada adds, "Lord Shiva's desiring to see Lord Vishnu reveal the most attractive and beautiful form of a woman was certainly a joking affair. Lord Shiva knew that he could not be agitated by any so-called beautiful woman. The daityas may have been bewildered, he thought, but since even the demigods could not be agitated, what to speak of me, who am the best of all the demigods?" Now we're starting to get our answer. Because he is thinking like that. And so, because it's certainly a joking affair, then it's between them. You know, this is boys
yes, exactly.
having a joking, right? You know. Okay. "However, because Lord Shiva wanted to see Lord Vishnu's form as a woman, Lord Vishnu decided to impersonate a woman and show him a form that would immediately put him in an ocean of lusty desires." So not even just a small, an ocean. Okay. In effect...
That's not fair.
No playing.
The thing is that...
It's like, you know, Lord Shiva and the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's not a fair fight.
But it's a joking affair. It's not who's more powerful, because there's no need to do that. It's just a joking affair. Like that. So therefore, it's that, you know, because it's just like boys. They get together and they do stupid jokes. You know, it's just like, you know, you get the bucket of water and then you put it on top of the door. You know, the door's a little bit open and then the person walks in and the bucket falls on the head. It's not fair, but it's just what boys do.
Fair's not fun.
Yeah, fair's not fun. Okay. "I will show you," okay, Lord Vishnu told Lord Shiva, "I will show you my form as a woman. And if you become agitated by lusty desires, do not blame me. Right? Because he's thinking, oh, it didn't bother the demigod's not going to bother me. So they're both joking there. Yeah. You know. What we see is that Krishna, especially with Mohini, very straightforward.
Yeah.
And so again, very straightforward, but they always take it in a light way. Like the demons took it, she was joking. Lord Shiva takes it, he was joking, because that's also part of the Mohini scene. So then he's just using the same move. Right? The attractive features of a woman are appreciated by those who are affected by lusty desires. But those who are above such desires, who are on the platform of Krishna consciousness, are very difficult to bewilder. Nonetheless, by the supreme desire of the personality of Godhead, everything can be done. This was to be a test of whether Lord Shiva could remain unagitated. Right? So here it says, the feature when appreciated by those with lusty desires, because they're seeing it in effect of what is enjoyable. That's the whole point. The thing is, you can see the acharyas, are like Sukadeva Goswami, he'll describe how beautiful the girl is, or this or that, but it's appreciating the feminine nature of Krishna's potency, and so there's certain features that make it attractive, and so it's like that. But it's not due to lusty desires. But you see, is then when like Paranjana, then it's a whole different thing, because along with then what he's saying, it's not light. It always has that aspect of who are you. You know, who do you belong to? You're loitering here in the forest, this, that, blah, going on and on and on, with the idea that, you know, there's a possibility of some connection. But you see, when the acharyas, then they just mention how beautiful and this and that, and that it's just part of dealing. It's not used as an opening for interaction. So it's, yeah, in other words, it's not an opening line, right? You know, it's all that it is just pointing out that, you know, like saying to Draupadi, oh, slender waisted one. It's just a fact. You know, it's just part of the feminine, how you say, quality. You know what I'm saying? So that's the difference you see between those who Prabhupada is talking about are above, and those who can be disturbed. Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued. After speaking in this way, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Vishnu, immediately disappeared, and Lord Shiva remained there with Uma, looking for him all around with moving eyes. Thereafter, in a nice forest nearby, full of trees with reddish-pink leaves and varieties of flowers, Lord Shiva saw a beautiful woman playing with a ball. Her hips were covered with a shining sari and ornamented with a belt. Because the ball was falling down and bouncing up, as she played with it, her breasts trembled. And because of the weight of those breasts, her heavy flower garlands, her waist appeared to be all but breaking at every step. So that means very, very thin waist, right? But it's also, as pointed out before in another description, that the proportion of her breasts make also the waist appear thinner. Does that make sense? Okay, yeah. As her two soft feet, which were reddish like coral, moved here and there, the woman's face was decorated by broad, beautiful, restless eyes, which moved as the ball bounced here and there from her hand. The two brilliant earrings on her ears decorated her shining cheeks like bluish reflections, and the hair scattered on her face made her even more beautiful to see. So you see, he's giving more definition here than he was with the demons. Because the demons, it doesn't take a whole lot. Right? Like that.
They're already disturbed.
Yeah, they're already disturbed. Yeah.
This is the similar description as in Paranjana.
Similar, yes, because the whole one is you're showing how qualified she is in the feminine way, because we're talking about the attraction. With the demons, you don't have to get into any detail because they're, you know, agitated anyway. And Paranjana, he's going to be disturbed. Like that. But at the same time, is these are just your standard, feminine qualities that are there. The potencies is there. And then from that, then, you know, the variety is created. You know, so depending upon in the universe, some are taller, some are shorter, like Yaksha girls are shorter, the more stocky. You know, so like this, it'll always be, but this will be your basic template, and then from there, it will be adjusted according to the individual. Is that, you know? The two brilliant earrings on her ears decorated her shining cheeks like bluish reflections. and the hair scattered on her face made her even more beautiful to see. As she played with the ball, the sari covering her body became loose, and her hair scattered. She tried to bind her hair with her beautiful left hand, and at the same time she played with the ball by striking it with the right hand. This was so attractive that the Supreme Lord, by his internal potency, in this way captivated everyone. 17-21. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 21. In Bhagavad Gita 7:14, it is said, Daivi hiesha gunamayi mamamaya duratyaya. The external potency of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is extremely strong. Indeed, everyone is fully captivated by her activities. Lord Shambhu, Shiva, was not to be captivated by the external potency, but because Lord Vishnu wanted to captivate him also, he exhibited his internal potency to act the way that his external potency acts to captivate ordinary living entities. Lord Vishnu can captivate anyone, even such a strong personality as Lord Shambhu. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, while Lord Shiva observed the beautiful woman playing with the ball, she sometimes glanced at him and slightly smiled in bashfulness. As he looked at the beautiful woman and she watched him, he forgot both himself and that Uma, his most beautiful wife, as well as his associates, nearby. So he's just looking at Vishnu there. He's completely forgot his wife is there, his associates are there, everybody is there. He's just completely bewildered. Right?
It means he also forgot Lord Vishnu was sitting there. No, Vishnu disappeared.
That's what we read. He did disappear. Like that.
Yeah.
I thought he sat there and then just came out and pushed into the bushes, but no, he disappeared. Because I guess that also puts more, you know. Otherwise you're talking and huh?
Yeah.
You know, so it's kind of like that. So he disappeared, so where? So then there's that
anticipation,
so that will make it even more. So it's a better presentation. So he wasn't sitting there. You know? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, Shiva lost all sense. His yoga, power, and discrimination having been stolen by the glance released along with her definite smile indicating her lust and her slight shyness. Right? Because that's the whole point, is that that's what Paranjana said was attractive, was the element of lust and shyness at the same time. Because if it's just lust, it's too aggressive. If it's just shyness, then there's nothing to work with, right? Because there's no everything's just going in. So when you have this combination of in and out at the same time, that's the attractive feature. So that's the point, is that you can see also from this, is that if you just balance these two, you know, just like the ingoing breath with the outgoing, then there's no movement. So therefore, the girl, the energy that goes in, that she attracts by drawing in, and the energy by out, if she just put them into each other, creates a neutral, and a girl can walk through a room full of people and no one will notice her. That's just the way it is. So it's some girls put out and they think that's bad, so then they pull in. But either way has that attractiveness. No, it's to make it neutral. So we see here is when they're used together, not neutralizing each other, then that's the most dangerous, because it's the same thing Paranjana said.
So they enhance each other.
They enhance each other, yeah. Right? Because in other words, the lust is there, there's an interest, but there's a shyness there. Because if there's shyness, then there's an approachableness. If it's the other, then it's going the other way. So then she's taking on the masculine. So unless there's a closeness, then you don't, that doesn't happen. Right? Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah. Because of thinking, some handsome man is looking at me, as she played with the ball in this way, his mind became agitated by gazing at Mohini, and by the glances from her, right? Because she's playing, because girls always know. Prabhupada mentioned they have a sixth sense, so they know who's looking, who's not looking, and everything like that. It's just the way it is. Srila Prabhupada adds, the material bondage of this world is that a beautiful woman can captivate a handsome man, and that a handsome man can captivate a beautiful woman. Such are the affairs that began when Lord Shiva observed the beautiful girl playing with the ball. In such activities, the influence of Cupid is very prominent. As both parties move their eyebrows and glance at one another, the lusty desires increase more and more. Such reciprocations of lusty desire took place between Lord Shiva and the beautiful woman. Even though Uma and Lord Shiva's associates were by Lord Shiva's side, such is the attraction between man and woman in the material world. Lord Shiva was supposed to be above all this attraction, but he was victimized by the captivating power of Lord Vishnu. Rishabhdev therefore explained the nature of lusty attraction. Pumsa striya maituni bhavametam tayor mito huridaya grantamahiku ato griha kshetra sutapta viter janasya moho yam aham mameti. The attraction between male and female is the basic principle of material existence. On the basis of this misconception, which ties together the hearts of the male and female, one becomes attracted to his body, home, property, children, relatives, and wealth. In this way, one increases life's illusions and thinks in terms of I and mine. Yes.
Just in the previous point, when shyness and lust are neutralizing each other, is that actually a transcendental position? If she can move through a room without...
It's just basically you're working on existence. Yeah. You're existing, but there's no desire, there's no endeavor, there's no... Because endeavor can be positive or negative.
Yes.
See, a girl doesn't have to try to attract by putting out energy. She can just... It's like what happens to stars, the big monster stars... And there's this black dwarf.
Yeah.
They just suck them in. That's their... Yeah. The principle is that all the girl has to do is turn and walk, and all the energy of everybody in the room goes with her. Mm-hmm. So that's specific. Yeah. So with training, a girl knows how this energy works. So she knows how to use it. Mm-hmm. Those without training either don't know what's there, so they don't want to get in trouble, and they wonder what they always do. Or they know they're untrained and they use it for themselves.
Yeah.
So like that. So the point is one should know how these energies work, because that's the point, is in control. You control the fire, then you control the butter.
Okay.
Right? Does that make sense? Yeah. That's it. But that control, that is the... Women are controlling it.
Yeah.
But by the proper behavior of men, women want to control it.
Yes.
You understand? That's the point. When the man behaves properly, then woman wants to control that. But if a man doesn't behave properly, she doesn't control it. When a man and woman exchange feelings of lust, both of them are victimized, and thus they are bound to this mature world in various ways. Right? So here, Shiva's being attracted, but Mohini's only playing that part, that aspect. But actually, she's not becoming attracted. It's just part of the joke. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, when the ball leapt from her hand and fell at a distance, the woman began to follow it. But as Lord Shiva observed these activities, a breeze suddenly blew away the fine dress and belt that covered her. Thus Lord Shiva saw the woman, every part of whose body was beautifully formed, and the beautiful woman also looked at him. Therefore, thinking that she was attracted to him, Lord Shiva became very much attracted to her. Right? So is that she's there, the clothes blow, he sees her completely, she looks at him like, oh, is he looking? Right? So that means then there's some attraction. Otherwise, she'd just be running after her clothes and get it, and, you know, like that. Does that make sense? Yeah. Lord Shiva, his good sense taken away by the woman because of lusty desires to enjoy with her, became so mad for her that even in the presence of Bhavani, he did not hesitate to approach her. The beautiful woman was already naked. Footnote 44. Vivastra means the top portion of her dress had slipped down. And when she saw Lord Shiva coming towards her, she became extremely bashful. Thus she kept smiling, but she hid herself among the trees and did not stand in one place. His senses being agitated, Lord Shiva, victimized by lusty desires, began to follow her, just as a lusty elephant follows a she-elephant. Right? So you see, in the feminine, it's more... It, the first face of Prajapati, as explained in the preliminaries of the wedding ceremony, is the upper portion of the body, right? The face and the chest. The second face of Vishnu is then below the navel, right? So, and we see in your more formal situations or more traditional situations, if there's anything feminine that's being dealt with, it's always in the upper part of the body, whatever above the waist. Does that make sense? What's below the waist, that's always very nicely covered. It doesn't matter the situation. So it's a formal occasion. It's not a formal occasion. They're always wearing the long dresses and everything. Does that make sense? Like that. But if there's any, then that femininity is there. If it's done, so that's why you don't have to go beyond this. It wasn't that she was, all her clothes came off. It just means that top part of the cloth that goes over, that blew to the side. Right? Does that make sense? So that's all the farther it needs to create that attraction of the first face of Prajapati, right? So that means, in this case, then Cupid. Right? Yeah, so that's why Prabhu was never very interested in this, how you say? As he mentioned to that one journalist, cool head, warm legs.
Not the other way around.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, because Prabhupada says when they wear these really, really short, it's just advertising sex. He didn't say it's advertising femininity. That's the difference. After following her with great speed, Lord Shiva caught her by the braid of her hair and dragged her near him. Although she was unwilling, he embraced her with his arms. Being embraced by Lord Shiva like a female elephant embraced by a male, the woman whose hair was scattered swirled like a snake. O king, this woman who had large, high hips was a woman of Yoga Maya presented by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. She released herself somehow or other from the fond embrace of Lord Shiva's arms and ran away. As if harassed by an enemy in the form of lusty desires, Lord Shiva followed the path of Lord Vishnu, who acts very wonderfully and who had taken the form of Mohini. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 31. Lord Shiva cannot be victimized by Maya. Therefore, it is to be understood that Lord Shiva was being thus harassed by Lord Vishnu's internal potency. Lord Vishnu can perform many wonderful activities through his various potencies. The Supreme Lord has various potencies by which he can act very efficiently, to do anything expertly. He doesn't even need to contemplate. Since Lord Shiva is being harassed by the woman, it is to be understood that this was being done not by a woman, but by Lord Vishnu himself, right? Through his internal potency, as Yoga Maya. Right? So that's the difference, is that even though Krishna, when his Yoga Maya expands and interacts with him on the same mood, He it doesn't create lust in him, right? But because they're dealing with him in that way, he reciprocates in that way. So that also shows another thing, how Vishnu is superior to Lord Shiva. Because Shiva can't be controlled by Mahamaya, but he can be controlled by Yogamaya. But Krishna can't even be controlled by Yogamaya. Is that what it is?
Saying that Krishna is controlled by his devotees.
He's controlled by the devotion of the devotees, the bhakti, that aspect. That's what is it. But it's not, so like it mentions, it says all the time, whenever it mentions about his consorts, it always mentions that how he's not controlled by them. But as a devotee, he reciprocates with them. So that's the kindness. That's the karunya rasa. Yeah. Like that, because conjugal rasa is known as karunya. Like that. So it's because he doesn't have to, but he does. That's the whole point.
But somebody might say, but this is just like compassionate, and it's not the real relationship.
I'm saying, yeah, they could say it's not the real relationship, it's just compassion. But the point is what is the position by which they're speaking, right? In other words, what does that mean? If it's just out of kindness that they're dealing, means that I'm actually not the attractive one, I'm not in control, I'm not needed, and I don't like that. So therefore I get insulted. And no, that's not the real thing, because I'm not the supreme. You understand? That's the basis of it.
It's material.
It's by I'm the controller and enjoyer. It's not I'm the servant. Because you see, as Radharani, the gopis, even though they have the gopis that are here in the rasa, they have a direct relationship with Krishna. They see themselves as Krishna's maidservants. They always identify in that way. So the point is they're servants, so it's just pleasing Krishna. That's the difficulty, is that we want to please ourselves, therefore we see it in that light. Does that make sense? Yeah, because otherwise you say, oh, but it's, you know, it's just like, okay, you're performing your duties in Grihastha Ashram, form the duties, it's just like doing your duty, you know, performing your part nicely in a play, it's a drama. And then I had one lady, no, but I want the real thing, I don't want a drama, I want actual relationships, it's just like, then you're in the wrong place, lady. Or that one. Yeah. Yeah, you know, it's like, you know, stop the world, I want to get off. It's like, it's not going to work, it's not going to happen. Like, it, there is no such. The only real is in the spiritual world. Here, it's the body's a dead body, and it's like a puppet show, or something, you know. And then you say, no, but I want real relationships between the puppets. It's kind of like, hey, how is that going to work? You know, it's like, you know, give me a break. I'm not sure if it's Sukadev Goswami mentions it or that, but I think he mentions it's like taking two pieces of wood and rubbing them together. That's so how real is that? So that's the whole point, is that that's why we went through all this other stuff before, so we're cool with it. Then we can appreciate it on the level of, you know, Vishnu and Shiva and the rasa aspect. Because otherwise, if we get back into tattva, then it goes out into there and it becomes, how you say, unfriendly. You know, especially the more aggressively it's presented, than the, how you say, according to Newton's law, then
equal opposite reaction.
Yes, yes. So, yes. Okay. Okay, Sri Sukadev Goswami continued. Just as a maddened bull elephant follows a female elephant who is able to conceive pregnancy, Lord Shiva followed the beautiful woman and discharged semen, even though his discharge of semen never goes in vain.
What?
Yes.
Why are they always compared to elephants? What's so special about those guys?
Well, here, maddened bull elephant means... Well, here. Once when we were in Guru Vayur, because they do the elephant procession there. They do it at 5 times a day. One big one, and then I think 4 other small ones, like that. So we do once a week. Other temples in South, they do like that once a week, or on special occasions, or things like that. But they're famous because they do every day. So therefore, they have to have lots of elephants. So they have an elephant farm. You know, it's a bit out of the city, so he went out there to visit. We're going around, they're pointing out the different elephants and this and that, and there was one big monster elephant chained to a tree, and no one goes near. All the other ones, the mahouts are there and dealing and all. This one's just there, they just throw the food over there. And they, you know, so what's with this guy? Since he's in rut, means, you know, they have those holes on the side of their head, and the juice comes down. When it goes in the mouth, they go mad. And so if you go near them, you could get killed. That's why in Mahabharata, when it says, the war elephants were there and they were in rut, that means anyone near them will be killed. So other than that, those, that kind of mahout, which, you know, it's basically kind of a mahout for kshatriyas. You know, he's not a temple elephant mahout, which, you know, we're more used to, or a work elephant mahout. We're talking about war elephants. So these guys must be very, very strong. You know, and the king. So they're the only one that won't be killed by this elephant. That makes sense. So when you say mad and bull elephant, then you understand how mad. And because they're, you know, bull, they're so strong and they're big. And they're, you know, so it gives that aspect. And it must be that because they're so focused, they have, their condition, at least of their mind, seems to be that of kapha. They don't forget anything. you know, like that also. So really focused and all that. So I would say...
So not only
elephants. Huh?
That's not only elephants.
No, but then there it's that's a general masculine feminine principle, but here then it's, you know, it's more, you know, so it must be that they're quite passionate, you know, so then therefore it is mentioned, right?
Alexander had problems with those
with
the war elephants.
War elephants.
And he tried to invade India.
Oh, okay. So he was stopped by them.
The first time he saw these things.
Oh, you never saw elephants before. Oh, that's why also Hannibal did okay when he went across. The elephants, yeah. Yeah, it would definitely not... Foot soldiers would not be inspired if they have... Because one of the things that they do is... You know, there's the thing they go out and trample. One of the things they do is spin. Spin and trample. Because you go in, it's in the straight, but when you're spinning, that just throws people off. The elephant spinning and trampling and like that, it's just like, you know, you just have, you know. You know, of course, afterwards, the Mahouts don't really like that, because then afterwards they have to spend 2 hours, you know, picking out all the soldiers from between the toes of the elephant. But, you know, that's just part of the,
that's,
you know,
part of the job.
Part of the downside of the job, right? So. Okay. O King, wheresoever on the surface of the globe fell the semen of the great personality, Lord Shiva, mines of gold and silver later appeared. Footnote 45. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 33. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments that those who seek gold and silver can worship Lord Shiva for material opulences. Lord Shiva lives under a bale tree and does not even construct a house in which to dwell. But although he's apparently poverty-stricken, his devotees are sometimes opulently endowed with large quantities of silver and gold. Maharaj Parikhit later asks about this, and Sukadeva Goswami replies. Okay. He lives under a bale tree. Why a bale tree? Because Krishna likes bale. So that's why a bale tree. Like that. You know, he likes playing with the bale fruits and that. You hear when they're out in the forest, they would play with them and stuff. So bale is it's... of the five mudras that you can use for Krishna, just for display. They're not part of the technical puja, they're part of just like showing to him. Like that, then bale is one of them. Bale, and I'm not even sure the... Maybe the bale, maybe five, yeah, but it's one of them. Following Mohini, Lord Shiva went everywhere, near the shores of the rivers and lakes, near the mountains, near the forest, near the gardens, and wherever there lived great sages. Srila Prabhupada comments to verse 34. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, remarks that Mohini Murti dragged Lord Shiva to so many places, especially to where the great sages lived, to instruct the sages that their Lord Shiva had become mad for a beautiful woman. Thus, although they were all great sages and saintly persons, they should not think themselves free, but should remain extremely cautious about beautiful women. No one should think himself liberated in the presence of a beautiful woman. The Shastras enjoin. One should not stay in a solitary place with a woman, even if she be his mother, sister, or daughter. For the senses are so uncontrollably powerful that in the presence of a woman one may become agitated, even if it's very learned and advanced. Srimad Bhagavatam 9:19-17. So that means if it can have a problem with mother, sister, daughter, let alone anyone else, right? So it's generally the everyone else is the problem, like that. So that's what the point is about. Srila Prabhupada comments. So no, Sukadev Goswami continued. O Maharaj Prickett, best of kings, when Lord Shiva had fully discharged semen, he could see how he himself had been victimized by the illusion created by the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus he restrained himself from any further maya. Srila Prabhupada comments, once one is agitated by lusty desires upon seeing a woman, those desires increase more and more. But when semen is discharged in the act of sex, the lusty desires diminish. The same principle acted upon Lord Shiva. He was allured by the beautiful woman Mohini Murti, but when his semen had been fully discharged, he came to his senses and realized how he had been victimized as soon as he had saw the woman in the forest. One is trained to protect his semen by observing celibacy. Naturally, he is not attracted by the beauty of a woman. If one can remain a brahmachari, he saves himself so much trouble in material existence. Material existence means enjoying the pleasure of sexual intercourse. Yen maitunari grihamedi sukham. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.9.45. If one is educated about sex life and is trained to protect his semen, he is saved from the danger of material existence. Because that's the basic point, is material world is based on the sexual attraction. The whole universe, that's the whole thing. So if that can, how that much that can be controlled is how much then the whole process of elevation works. Right? So we see for the karmis, they may control themselves this life so that next life they can, you know, not be so controlled, you know. But the jnanis will try more so they can come to the transcendental platform. So each one, it makes them more powerful. So in this way, we say that's the jnanis are therefore more respected. But actually, it's only when you connect yourself to the Lord that there's no interest. So what it means is that everyone should become devotees and everyone should be absorbed in the Lord. Then these things, there's no attraction to the mundane aspect. Right? Then grihastha life goes on nicely, brahmacharya life, all these go on nicely. But if that's not, Krishna consciousness is not there, then it's not going to necessarily work out so great. You may be more pious, able to control more, less pious, less. But the point is control is only there because of Krishna consciousness. And that's because you don't see opportunity. Does that make sense? So means you just see husband and wife working together in Krishna consciousness, how to support each other in Krishna consciousness. That's what you see. So therefore, it's not about sense gratification. It's just about performance of duties. So that makes it easier. So, but we'll generally take it, no, you have to sit there and grit your teeth and stuff like that. That's not what it's talking about. Like that. Because otherwise, if teeth gritting worked, then Haridas Thakur and was that Vishwamitra would be described on the same platform. Right, but no. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Okay. Sri Sukadeva Goswami continued, thus Lord Shiva could understand his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. Having reached this understanding, he was not at all surprised by the wonderful way Lord Shiva had acted upon him. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur comments, at the moment of regaining his discriminating power, he saw that Mohini had disappeared. Right? Also helps the whole program.
Yes.
He then understood that his own bewilderment and discrimination depended upon the Lord. Right? Because he was agitated when the Lord disappeared, then it all goes away. So that's the whole point, is he understood everything's in connection with the Lord. So he's dependent on the Lord, everything goes nicely. Right?
Can we say, Maharaj, that more advanced than him is Uma? Because she also understood?
I guess, but you do see Uma hangs out with Mohini in the last covering, the Pradhan covering of the universe.
Just in case.
And, you know, and, well, it's just like Gopur Kumar is going by and says, hey, come on over. You know. Like that. You know, Uma's offering Artik. And she, hey, you want to offer Artik? You know, come over. You know, like that. And so he says, no, good.
I'm good.
It just kept going. You know, so.
Lord Shiva is not hanging out with both
of them? Huh?
In Mahakalapura, Lord Shiva.
No, Mohini's only in that outer cover. Uma's there with him there, but she was there in the outer one then offering worship. Because each had their deity. So the Pradhan, the deity, is Mohini. But, you know, the amount of potency that bewilder those who are materialistically inclined. Because for the devotees like Gopa Kumar, then they're respectful. It's just a form of the Lord and the Lord's devotees, and so then he... It's got, you know, places to go, people to see, things to do, like that.
Can we also say that Lord, he put extra energy for Lord Shiva? Mohini Murti that he showed to the demons.
Yeah, no,
didn't
that's
even bewilder demigods.
No, because that's the whole point, is that how much do you have to put in at each level? So to run the whole material world, then it's only, you know, a millionth of a millionth portion. Right? So it's not, you know, what would a millionth of a millionth be? That's a huge number, no? Right? So, it doesn't take much. But Lord Shiva, he's beyond that, so it would take more.
With Gopakumar?
Yes.
Gopakumar would be above Lord Shiva, right?
This is because the Lord was specifically trying to bewilder him. Because it's Shiva is Gopeshwar, so he's the protector of the Rasa dance, so he's not getting disturbed there. Yeah. So the whole point is Krishna specifically did this. So even though Lord Shiva cannot be agitated, Krishna did it. That's the whole point. Krishna has the potency to do anything. So because he desired it, it happened. And then from this, Lord Shiva then understands that understood his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. So Krishna can do. So that it's not that Shiva is in the position he's in and not agitates, because that's Krishna's desire. But if Krishna wants it to be other than that, then it's going to go that way. So as he pointed out here, at the moment of gaining his discriminating power, he saw that Mohini had disappeared. He then understood that his own bewilderment and discrimination depended upon the Lord. Right? So his bewilderment depended on the Lord, his discrimination depended on the Lord. So not getting bewildered is based on the Lord. Having discrimination, that's based on the Lord. So when we take full shelter of the Lord, then everything is auspicious. You know, because before he thought, oh, I won't be agitated. So just for fun, you know, then Vishnu, you know.
Yeah.
He understood the greatness of the Lord, or he understood his own power of yoga, right? So in other words, how great the Lord is, or how he's not as great as the Lord. Either way you want to look at it. He was not surprised that he had been befooled and given discrimination, since the Lord resides everywhere within the universe, and thus is capable of bewildering or enlightening even Lord Shiva. Srila Prabhupada adds, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is known as all-powerful because no one can excel him in any activity. In Bhagavad Gita 7:7, the Lord says, Matav paratanam nanyat kinchid asti dhananjaya. O conqueror of wealth, there is no truth superior to me. No one can equal the Lord, or no one can equal the Lord or be greater than him, for he is the master of everyone. As stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 5:142, Ekale Ishvara Krishna Arashabhritya. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the only master of everyone, including even Lord Shiva. What to speak of others? Right? So that's the whole point, is that if Shiva can be bewildered, then what about anyone else? That was the idea of going through the ashrams, and that one is just, you know, it's instructive to everybody else, but it also then, you know, establishes the supremacy of Vishnu over Shiva. Like that.
The demigods, they were not bewildered just because they surrendered to Krishna.
You can look at it that aspect there, but it's that because here we see from before is Krishna was thinking, you know, how he's going to arrange this. But by his potencies, he can. Like as Prabhupada mentioned, is that whatever Krishna wants, it happens. He doesn't even have to think about it. He just wants it, his energies carry it out. So you thought from this is what he'd like, it happens. Right? So, yeah. Does that make sense?
No, but it
means on the level of what he manifests for, what do you say? For in the pastime with the demigods and demons, then yes, because they're devotees, then they're not bewildered. And the asuras, because they're not, they are. But the point is for Lord Shiva, he used more potency than that.
And whatever the activities being performed by Lord Shiva, it cannot be considered as devotional service to Lord Krishna, towards Mohini.
But the point is he's absorbed in the Lord.
As in him.
Thus, Lord Shiva could understand his position and that of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who has unlimited potencies. Having reached this understanding, he was not all surprised by the wonderful way Lord Vishnu had acted upon him. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments. At the moment of regaining his discriminating power, he saw that Mohini had disappeared. He then understood that his own bewilderment and discrimination depended upon the Lord. So the Lord is creating his bewilderment, the Lord is creating his discrimination. Right. Does that make sense? So the point is he is always dependent upon the Lord, so therefore he could understand that this was the position. Does that make sense? Yeah? Okay. Okay, since the Lord resides within everything in the universe and thus is capable of bewildering or enlightening even Lord Shiva. So everything within the universe, so let alone, and Shiva, because within the material, then he will be considered on one level the top. Right? Because that's the aspect of the Lord where he is interacting with or manifesting material energy. Right? So he would be, in one sense, the top within the material sphere. So if he can control him in the way of bewildering or enlightening, that means everybody else within is also under control of Vishnu. So no one's left out. Srila Prabhupada adds, okay, we already did that. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, is the only master of everyone, including even Lord Shiva. What to speak of others? Lord Shiva was already aware of the supreme power of Vishnu. But when he was actually put into bewilderment, he felt proud to have such an exalted master. Right? Because he is connected to Krishna, and Krishna has such power, so he didn't feel bad. Sri Sukadev Goswami continued, seeing Lord Shiva unagitated and unashamed, Lord Vishnu, Madhusudan, was very pleased. Thus he resumed his original form and spoke as follows. 37. Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur comments, Shiva was not agitated with guilt, thinking, what calamity! I, the Lord of great yoga, have been blinded by material enjoyment. He was without shame, since the Lord is his antaryami, witnessing everything. The meaning is this, I cannot be bewildered by anyone, and bewilderment caused by my Lord is not a fault, but an ornament. Without causing my bewilderment, how could one say my Lord has extraordinary power? Right? So therefore, it's a glory of Vishnu. That's why he doesn't see it as a problem. That display of power nourishes the quality of bhakti in me, his servant. The Supreme Personality of God has said. Yes. That's that.
He is the Lord of the false ego, means he doesn't have false ego.
He's just the Lord of false ego.
Yeah, because only beautiful ego we wouldn't say that.
Only?
If anything happens to us, then...
Yes, because if we're... Then you're not the controller and enjoyer, so therefore then it's a problem. You know, plus he would have been frustrated because Mohini disappeared, and you know, the whole thing. You know, it should have been Narayana hits his thigh, all the apsaras come out, Indra is bewildered, all the apsaras that are there, the Gandharva apsaras, then they're ashamed that they even tried, you know, because these apsaras that came out of the thigh of Vishnu were unlimitedly more beautiful than them, like that. And so then you know, that'll put them in their place. Indra would be put in his place. And as they're all going back into the Lord's thigh, then he should have thought, wow, you know, I'm trying to do something here. Vishnu is so much more powerful than me. So he's even bewildered me. I should appreciate that position. But no, as the last apsara is going in, he wakes up and goes, wait, one, give me one. You know, there were thousands, but okay, I'll just be, you know, just one. Yeah, but there was only one left, and it was disappearing really fast. So it wasn't like, you know, he woke up immediately and says, wow, I'll take them all. You know, it's like that, you know. You know, so, yeah, so it didn't happen. Yeah. Okay. The Supreme Personality of Godhead said, O best of the demigods, although you have been amply harassed because of my potency in assuming the form of a woman, you are established in your position. Therefore, may all good fortune be upon you. Right? So when we get embarrassed and then we can't do our service and then we can't do anything, then that's not actually so pleasing to the Lord. Maya catches us, then it's a matter of, no, I'm servant of Krishna. I should do better. We feel, how you say, what's the Rupa Goswami mentions? I think it's remorse that, but remorse not in specifically what's done, remorse in that one wasn't Krishna conscious, therefore these things are being done. But these things are just standard. These go with the the modes. Particular mode, particular stupidity. Different modes, different stupidity. Right?
And that's why Pragalpa is so dangerous, because it goes to the activity instead of the mentality behind it.
Yes, yes, like that. So then, you know, it's all about that's what's good or bad about it.
And you're cultivating that.
Yeah. So then the point is then he's remaining his position, because so then therefore we see that's why the Manu mentions a Brahmin is not disturbed. Something goes wrong, he doesn't become disturbed. He just thinks, okay, from the Brahminical position, what should I do now? What should I, you know, what to learn, what should I do, how to move forward. That's the Brahminical mentality. This modern thing where, you know, you're supposed to lament and roll on the ground and they leave a gun on the table and then they all just sit out in the room there smoking their cigars and wait till they hear you, you know, pull the trigger and then, you know, they send the boys in to clean up. That's not the Vaishnav line, you know. Does that make sense? Yeah. So that kind of thing is where, no, it has to be, because that's only because everybody else's sense of justice, that they want to appease their own sense of justice, which is also mundane. So what they want is a material show to please their own material desires.
Because they want to do it.
Yes, because there's nothing spiritual about this whole process. Understanding what's wrong in Krishna consciousness, how to improve it, how to do that. That contemplation, that manana, then there'll be remorse and then there'll be that proper moving forward. Right? When it becomes inspired, the mercy of the Vaishnavas, the opportunity for more service to absorb oneself so that one doesn't get distracted, more association, then that's the meaning of mercy. But this whole thing is, no, you're supposed to, you know, one, you're supposed to make a public display and embarrass yourself in front of everyone, and then you're internally damned on top of that. You know, this is just mundane from top to bottom, right to left, front to back. Yeah, that's all 10. Okay. So it means in all the 10 directions, it's just nonsense. Yeah, it's just... Yeah, it's that, you know, and that's also, even according to modern quantum, that's all, what do you call it? Dimensions.
All 11 dimensions.
Yes, all the dimensions. Okay. Srila Prabhupada comments. Since Lord Shiva is the best of the demigods, he is the best of all devotees, Vaishnavanam Yatasham Bahu. His exemplary character was therefore praised by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who gave his benediction by saying, "May all good fortune be upon you." When a devotee becomes a little proud, the Supreme Lord sometimes exhibits his supreme power to dissipate the devotee's misunderstanding. After being amply harassed by Lord Vishnu's potency, Lord Shiva resumed his normal, unagitated condition. Right? Because before there was that little bit of pride. Right? Like that. But because he was dealing with Vishnu, he shouldn't have had that. Yes?
Similar to Chitraketu's case.
Yes. A little bit of pride. Though it was on the advanced platform. But, you know, and it was true, but still because of that pride, then Uma took offense. Mm-hmm. Because even if they are equal as Uttamadikari, still there's going to be respect. You know, Narad Muni and Lord Shiva are brothers, but there's still respect. You know, so here he's just treating him as one of his, you know, buddies. Then, you know, even though technically on one level they are. And that, because Shiva didn't get disturbed, but she got disturbed because technically, etiquette-wise, you shouldn't do that. Right, because that's also the feminine principle is dharma. That's the central point in which you judge what's going on. So it's either dharma, meaning it should be followed, or dharma, it should not be followed. But it's always centered around dharma. Even crazy girls, they're crazy to not follow what should be done. You know, it's not that they're just crazy and don't know what's right or wrong. You can only be crazy if you know what is the standard and you're going against it. Otherwise, how can you be so crazy? Why would you be consistent? Right? Yeah.
Is this why Mahabharata mentioned that in front of women you should never allow dharma to be?
Yes. yes, yes, yes. That was the whole point of in that story with Chitrarupa, because his wives were there. They were actually not acting properly, so therefore he came and attacked them. Because he asked, why are you attacking? We're approaching the Ganga. What did we do wrong? And he said, no. You don't have a proper ashram, and you don't have a guru walking in front of you. Right? You know, you're not following the Brahmins. They're Kshatriyas. They should have a Brahmin. story. Where were they? This is after the house of Lak, after killing Baka, no, not Baka, Hidimba. After Bhima's pastime with Hidimbi, and then when they were moving around, I'm not sure if Vyasadeva met them. I think at some point he met them and made arrangements for them to stay in Ekachakra. So they were walking around, so before they got to Ekachakra. Then they approached the Ganga. And so it was at night, Arjuna had a torch, and they were walking towards the Ganga. To refresh themselves, this, that. So then the Gandharva king, that was Chitrarupa, right? Then he was in the Ganga with his wives. And then when he saw them coming, then he came out on his chariot and attacked them. So Arjuna didn't even bother with his, bows and arrows. He just chanted mantra and imbued his torch with the Agniastra and just threw it at him. It burnt his chariot to ashes, and he fell out, head first on the ground. Grabbed him by his hair, nice hair, nicely decorated with flowers, and dragged him over to Yudhishthira, like that, and then Yudhishthira, and then at that time, one of his wives came forward and says, please, spare him. So then Yudhishthira, has a rule that any Kshatriya who's saved by a woman, then he won't bother, right, because already it's, a problem. Yeah, like that. So he let him go, and so then because of the dealings, because it wasn't done with arrogancy, because we see that someone else did that, but he was quite arrogant about it. I can't remember if it was Jarasandha or something else. They were arrogant about it. But he wasn't, and so he appreciated the qualities of him, the prowess of Arjuna, because he's a Gandharva, right? Remember what was, we go back a few generations, then Dhritarashtra is jokingly called the son of he is son of Shantanu. But Dhritarashtra is, because his father was the king, but he had two wives, but he was so absorbed in spending his time with his wives. And the kingdom was nicely run, so it was peaceful time. It wasn't a problem. But because he was always absorbed so much with his wives, his constitution became so weak, he got tuberculosis and died. So then he's jokingly called son of Vichitravirya, because it was Vichitravirya's wives. It was Ambika Ambalika, right? Amba, yeah, had problems with Bhishma Devi, yeah. So, therefore, his father's wives, they were impregnated by the brother, right?
Yes.
Does that make sense? Yes. So then, like that. So he was Vichitravirya. There was a Gandharva named Vichitravirya, and he couldn't tolerate that there's a human named Vichitravirya. So he came down and fight. They fought straight for 3 years without stopping. And then eventually Gandharva got the upper hand and killed him. Like that. Yeah, probably better than dying of tuberculosis. Yeah, whatever. So. Yeah, yeah. So. Yeah, so therefore Gandharvas and humans, that it's generally they're quite powerful. So that this person could just, without any weapon, just take his torch and just toss it at him and knock him out of the sky, destroy his chariot and knock him out of the sky, then drag him over to Yudhishthir, and then Yudhishthir then, you know, release him, then he was impressed. So then, you know, he wanted to give something, but he says no. So then they just became friends. So friendship was their position. So then while they were sitting and talking, he asked, why did you attack us? We did nothing wrong. So he says, no, you did three things wrong. One is you're approaching the river at night. The nighttime, humans aren't supposed to approach the river. That's why you have water outside the river, you know, like that. Because at night, that's when the time for Gandharvas and everybody else. Just like after lunch, in the afternoon, the big lakes and reservoirs, that's also for them. Like it mentions, you're not supposed to swim for an hour after lunch, you know, because otherwise you'll sink and this and that. That's because the Gandharvas get annoyed and they'll sink you. Like that. Because that's their time. From the time when you take bath before lunch, from then until after, you know, the evening, that's their time. And so humans aren't supposed to bother them. So that they have their time in the midday and at night. So you saying you approached, but Arjuna made the point that no, Ganga, the Himalayas, and I forget what's the other one. You can approach at any time. There is no rules. Yes, a well, other things. That was it. The Ganga, the well, and the Himalayas, you can approach at any time. Other bodies of water, other rivers, other, you know, lakes and this, yes, that rule does apply, but not for the Ganga, a well, and the Himalayas. Then he mentioned that you have graduated, but you're not grihasthas. So you're not properly situated. So that's also, you know, there. Because it wasn't that they were going on pilgrimage as snatikas, you know, before. It was just they were ended up out in the forest because things didn't work out so well. It was a political, you know, arrangement. And then the third thing he says is your kshatriyas, you're supposed to be following Brahman. So where's your Brahman? Right? And that you're supposed to lead. Because when the kshatriya moves, the Brahman walks in front. Right? You know, it's not because of the Vietnamese thing that you go there and if there's a mine still left over from the Vietnam War, you get blown up and the kshatriya is okay. Like that. No, it's not that one. Yeah? Like that. So then he walks in the front. So then they said, so then where can we find, you know, such a Brahmin? So they mentioned to an ashram, he mentioned Domya and all that, so they went there and they got Domya. Then they continued. I'm not sure how it worked out. I think Vyasadeva arranged for them to stay at this Brahmin's house there. And then he arranged about going to Draupadi Swayamvara. So then, you know, one of them wasn't a problem and the other two were worked out. And then when Arjuna went to the heavenly planets, you know, to visit Indra, you know, for those 5 years, then he learned music and dance from Chitrarata, because they were old friends, so, which came in handy in the kingdom of Urat. Yes. Okay. Story? Okay. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Jai Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanam ki.